Welcome back to KSCJ Radio, 1360 AM, 94.9 FM in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis, and this is Having Read That, conversations with authors about their books.
I'm joined by both Jason Reynolds and Dr. Ibram Kendi, who is, together they've got a joint project here. Dr. Kendi put out a book, it was called Stamped from the Beginning, The Definitive History of Racist Ideas in America. Jason Reynolds has now taken that work along with Dr. Kendi and come out with Stamped, Racism, Anti-Racism, and You. It's a book for young people, and it teaches, well, a lot of people, including young people, about race, anti-racism in the United States. You know, Jason, you begin by saying in this book that this is not a history book. So what is it?
It's a not history book. I think, ultimately, the reason that I start the book that way is because, for a few reasons. Number one is because young people don't want to read history books. I mean, their entire educational careers have been with textbooks, giving them sort of an overview of the Civil War and the Vietnam War and Revolutionary War and the Constitution and the branches of the government, right? And I think the way that it's written don't have them in mind. And so in order for me to lure them in, I have to tell them that this is not that. Secondly, history doesn't actually exist in the way that we think about it. It doesn't exist in a vacuum, as if it was a thing that just happened. It's a thing that influences today, and it's a thing that will influence tomorrow.
I grew up in the 1980s, and I know when I think back, when I think of history of racism, I think of two events, Civil War and slavery, and the Civil Rights era. And it seems like that's where my memory of what I was taught in history class starts and stops. But, you know, as you go through this book, Ibram, in your original work, the whole idea of tracing racism throughout history, you focus on these five historical figures, and you basically give an unwashed version of their lives and the racist ideas and how it affected their lives. Whose stories did you choose to tell, and why did you pick those five people?
Well, we wanted to choose characters that really sat in the middle of this larger racial story, this larger racial debate. And so we chose, you know, Cotton Mather, who was really the preeminent Puritan intellectual in colonial America, lived from about the 1660 to 1720. He was the premier theologian. And at the time, race was a theological concept. Science was a theological concept. And so science did not really secularize, and race didn't really until really the American Revolution. And one of the guiding figures of the secularization of race was Thomas Jefferson, who was the sort of next sort of central character. And Jefferson dies on the eve of the abolitionist movement, which really picked up in the 1830s, and one of the preeminent abolitionist, if not the preeminent white male abolitionist, was William Lloyd Garrison, who's the third major character. And so by the end of the 19th century, you had black intellectuals rising, most specifically W.E.B. Du Bois, who was the fourth major character. And then finally, we wanted to provide more of an archetypal anti-racist character over the last sort of 60 years, and that character was Angela Davis, who was the last character.
And Jason, in your book, and you heard Ibram mention Thomas Jefferson, you describe Jefferson as a walking contradiction. What do you mean by that?
I mean that Jefferson was the most wishy-washy man I've ever read about. I mean, he just, you know, everything about his life was sort of a push-pull from the struggle as it pertained to race. For instance, I mean, from the very beginning of his life, he was raised on a plantation. His father owned slaves. But he saw these slaves as his friends, as if one could own your friends. And sort of totally ignored the fact that these people were owned by his family, right? And that sort of walking the line, that teetering, would happen for the rest of his life. And I actually think Thomas Jefferson is closer to most of us, actually. I think that he sort of struggles in the way that most of us struggle, where it's like, I know this is wrong, and so what I'm going to do is I'm going to see this wrongdoing not as a moral wrongdoing, but as an economic necessity. And I think we all, especially in America, we struggle with that very thing every single day of our lives.
Ibram, one of the most interesting things I read in in Jason's book, and I know it was based on your book, was this whole idea of climate theory, and you trace it all the way back to Aristotle, and I'd never heard that before, and I don't know if that's a tribute to just the selective courses I took in high school and college or what, but can you explain this climate theory, because it is so completely bizarre to me, and it doesn't make a lot of sense, but it seemed to be accepted by a lot of people at the time.
So, make a long story short, so Aristotle, and being a Greek philosopher, and he lived in the Mediterranean sort of world, which had it was cooler than Northern Europe, and it was also cooler than, let's say, Sub-Saharan Africa. And so he imagined that since they were in this sort of cool climate, this climate that wasn't too cold or hot, that the climate itself, the environment, was making Greek people superior. And so he justified Greek superiority based on this idea. And strikingly, you know, sort of fast forward to the 1700s and the 1800s, and even sort of before that, you had European thinkers, particularly during the Enlightenment era, making the case that essentially the way in which black people came to be was they ventured out of Europe, where humanity was born, came to Africa, were blackened by the sun, but we can eliminate their blackness by come back up to cooler and colder climates where they'll become white again.
Jason, I know when you started this project, when Ibram contacted you, you were reluctant at first. What insecurities did you have taking on a project like this? I mean, you're a number one New York Times bestselling author of books for young people. You can write, but this project gave you some pause. Why?
I think one of the best parts about being an adult is knowing when you're sort of out of your depth. You know, is respecting the people who know more than you, who researched and I don't know. I think I had a certain kind of respect for them, and so because of that respect, I felt a bit intimidated by that work. I wasn't a good student. I don't know how to research. I these were things that I struggled with in school, and so I just didn't want to. I didn't want to drop the ball on what I like to call the newest and latest and most important tuning fork. In regards to the conversation around race, which is stamped from the beginning, by the way. And so I was careful. On the flip side, though, I think the beauty about writing for children is that children constantly get to remind you to go ahead and jump out the window regardless, you know, jump into the water regardless. Even if you know that you're out of your depth, allow yourself the opportunity to adapt. Trust yourself. And so that's how I kind of came around to it. But it took a while. It took a while. Even once I said yes to doing the project, it took a while for me to even figure out how to make it feel like me and to be honest with what I would want to do, because I didn't want to disrespect his work, you know?
And when the word from your subtitle, anti-racism, putting that into perspective, you talk about the segregationists who are haters, the assimilationists who are likers, and the anti-racists who are lovers. Is anti-racism, is that the goal for a society as you see it when it comes to talking about race, to have a society of anti-racists?
Yes, and it's the goal, because if we had a society of people who are striving to be anti-racist, we would have a society of people who would view racial disparities and inequities as not the result of, let's say, an inferior group or superior group, but the result of policy. And so then we as anti-racists would be trying to figure out, okay, what policies are leading to black people dying at higher rates than white people from COVID-19? What policies can we change? And then we would go about changing those policies and presumably eliminating those disparities. And then when we saw racial equality, we would view that as normal, because we'd say, you know, despite all the differences, cultural, you know, bodily differences, these people are on the same level, and we would try to maintain that equality. That's precisely the goal.
Jason, the whole idea of writing a book that kids want to read versus a book that's written for what the prototypical student should be seems to be a no-brainer, and yet it's very revolutionary what you did here. Do you see this as maybe a first step toward getting books that people read in school, kids read in school, to be more aimed toward the kids themselves and not just the kids as students?
Oh, I hope so. I think, I think for me, implicitly, that's my goal, right? Like, I think for me, yes. I mean, the short answer is yes. I think the schools have done a wonderful job in terms of introducing novels and fiction into the classroom and using those sort of pieces of literature. And even in the expansion, as we continue to push for the expansion of fiction in the classroom, I think those things are sort of moving along. The needle is moving slowly, but it's moving. But I do think we have to attack and recalibrate what it means to teach nonfiction and what it means to make nonfiction accessible and relevant and interesting and humorous at times, because it is for our students, and I think they will latch on to it differently.
All right, the book is Stamped, Racism, Anti-Racism, and You. It's a remix of the National Book Award-winning Stamped from the Beginning by Ibram Kennedy. This book is by Jason Reynolds. Gentlemen, just an absolute great complement of works that you've put together here. I hope that young people can pick it up and learn from it, because as I read it, I thought this is the kind of book I'd want to read as a student. It was really, or as a child. It was really geared for that and made it interesting to read. Thank you, gentlemen, for joining me today.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
This has been Having Read That on KSCJ Radio in Sioux City, Iowa. I'm Brian Vikalskis. Check out all of our episodes on our website, kscj.com. Also, be sure to like Having Read That on Facebook and subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Thanks to segment producer John Weisler. We will be back next time.
Come on, people now. Smile on your brother. Everybody get together.